Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, December 12th, 2010, and this is show number 290. Well, I just started looking at the calendar, and I realized that Christmas is on a Saturday night, and we take off to see relatives on the 26th, so there's no way I'm going to be doing a live show on the 26th, unfortunately. It also means that I need to get the show out by Thursday the 23rd. The good news is that I'm taking vacation that week, but the chances that I'll think up lots of clever things to talk about in that short week is practically zero, so I'm going to need your help. If you've got an application you really enjoy, Mac, Windows, Linux, iOS, Android, even BlackBerry, and you've been meaning to do an audio recording for the show, now is your chance. Long-time contributors and first-time contributors, all are welcome. Remember to keep them to about 3 to 5 minutes long. I might let you go a little longer because I'm planning on being desperate in a couple of weeks. And if you can, it'd be great if you can include your script so we can have it for the show notes. Don't forget to put links to the products you talked about, too. If you can get them in for me, say, anytime this week, I won't be panicking as much the following week. The sooner the better. Or if you're pretty sure you're going to do one, shoot me a note and say, I'm going to do one. Well, right on the heels of the holidays will be Macworld 2011 in San Francisco. Good news, due to popular demand, there will be another NoSilla Castaways party on Friday night, January 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. Now, the chat room is going wild now. Yay! People are all excited. Now, I want to tell you, this is not one of those crazy drunken brawl invite everyone you know off the streets free drink parties. This is a no-host bar. That's the kind that means I ain't buying. But we'll have light hors d'oeuvres supplied by us and a private room for people who really care about the show and want to meet each other to hang out, geek out, and have fun. I'm working on a registration page so I can get a good headcount, and I'll of course be including a donate button if you'd like to help defray some of the costs. Last year, people were really generous in helping out, so that motivated us to do it again. I sure hope a lot of you can come and meet up. If you can't come, I suspect there might be a faceplant or two going on during the show. Well, Steve Sheridan is going to join us today because he actually wanted to add something to something I talked about last week. So what's the topic of the day, Steve?
Good morning, or should I say afternoon, Allison?
It is 12:01.
Yeah. I wanted to follow up on your last NoSillaCast episode 289 from last week, where you talked about tilt-shift photography.
Right. I was talking about how much fun it was with iStop Motion.
Yeah. So you made a few comments in the in that session about tilt-shift photography that I wanted to follow up on. You noted, for instance, you weren't sure why it is so compelling.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, if you had a picture of a model and you posted it, I wouldn't think it was amazing. But if it's a picture of something real and it looks like a model, for some reason, that's like, wow, that's wild.
Right. So I wanted to delve into your comments a bit more and explain why I believe tilt-shift photography is so compelling.
Okay.
All right. So first, let's kind of catch people up for that may not have heard the episode and remind them how tilt-shift photography is used. Among other things, the effect is used to make real life-size objects and scenes look miniaturized like toys or models.
Right.
So you spoke about how that's accomplished by artificially creating a narrow region in the photo or the video where the scene is in focus, leaving the regions outside of that scene out of focus or outside of that region.
Right. I don't understand why that works, but I know that's how you do it.
Right.
Along with intensifying the colors, so
yes.
Oversaturating.
Yes. So this effect, the tilt-shift effect, works if the scene has a dimension of depth. That is, some of the things in the scene need to be close and others far away. The effect doesn't work if all the objects in the scene are the same distance away from the camera. So using a photo of a wall or a face that is parallel to the plane of the camera would not work.
And I think you pointed that out. Yeah.
Right. So why is it so compelling? I translate this to, why does the human brain interpret objects in a tilt-shift scene as miniaturized in such a convincing manner? Just to be a little more specific.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to get into a little bit. I think the reason has to do with optics and how light rays coming from near versus far objects have different characteristics. But more importantly, the human brain subconsciously uses these differences as visual cues to determine distances to those objects.
Okay. All right. I'm with you so far.
Okay. And jump in if I start losing you at any point.
When my eyes roll up into my head, I'll let you know.
Exactly. Right, right. So first I need to use the optics term depth of field. Most of your listeners probably know what that is, but for those that don't, depth of field is the range of distances over which an optical system, whether it's a camera or your eye, maintains its focus for a given scene. So okay. Objects outside the depth of field are not in focus. Objects in the depth of field are in focus.
Okay, and that could be a narrow or a deep depth of field, depending on how the lens or your eyes are behaving at that time.
Right, okay. And we'll get into that here, because that effect is used.
Okay.
So the depth of field can be adjusted in an optical system, and it's generally accomplished by varying the aperture size of, say, the camera or your eye.
Right.
A smaller aperture yields a larger depth of field, and conversely, a larger aperture yields a smaller depth of field.
Now, the way I can really get this home to people who aren't photographers is if you have any kind of vision problems at all, you invariably say it's harder to see at night. And the reason that is because at night, the aperture, otherwise known as the pupil of your eye, actually gets bigger, which gives you a shallower depth of field. And that means you can only focus at a certain distance. You can't focus as deep as you can during broad daylight when your pupil has contracted.
Exactly. So the range over which you can focus when your pupils are dilated is much smaller.
Right.
The depth of field. So a property of optics is that the depth of field is proportional to the focal point of the scene, kind of the center of the scene, assuming the aperture size remains fixed.
Okay, so what?
So I guess what we're saying is the range of distances over which you maintain a focus is larger. That range is larger for things that are far away than it is for things that are close.
Why?
So, well, that gets into some physics, and I'm not sure we can get into that. I'd ask that you take that as a given, but it has to do.
So you say close things have a shallower depth of field than far things? I don't understand that. Okay.
Think of it has to do with, for a given aperture size, the light rays come together at a sharper angle for closer scenes, and so that region over which they intersect or focus is small. But for things far away, the light rays are almost parallel. So at a great distance, there's a lot larger region over which they are relatively in focus or converge.
Okay. And anybody who's tried to focus a camera, say, on a petal of a flower up close realizes that just minor adjustments, it'll go out of focus. But once you're about 15 feet away on a camera, it's the same focal length as if you want to, you know, take a picture of the mountain behind it.
Right.
Maybe not 15 feet, but you work with me there. Yeah, 100 feet is 1,000 feet. It's the same thing.
Right.
Okay, all right.
So if you accept the fact that the depth of field is larger, the range over which you can focus is larger for scenes that are farther away and smaller for closer scenes, then we can proceed.
Okay, I buy it. You have made your point. It is accepted.
All right. So for outdoor scenes where objects are far away generally, they can be widely separated in range and still all be in focus due to a large depth of field. But for close-up scenes, let's say you're taking a picture on a tabletop or something, the same separation of objects would result in some of those objects being in focus and others being out of focus due to a very small depth of field.
Oh, I see where you're going here.
Little Brian Regan thrown in. does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Okay. So close-up stuff would be moving in and out of focus more than the far-away stuff. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, proportionally, you know, as a percentage of the range, it's the same. But for the absolute range of focus, it's much smaller when objects are closer.
Okay. I got you. Right.
Proportionally, it's the same, but it's the absolute range over which the focus is maintained.
Okay. I buy that point.
Okay. So it turns out the brain subconsciously uses this depth of field information in a scene as a visual cue to estimate how far away objects are. And we do this without thinking. In fact, over our lifetime, our brain is subconsciously trained to associate depth of field as a cue for distance. So this is a very powerful and compelling effect that's ingrained in us.
Hmm.
So when we see a scene with a narrow depth of field or a narrow region of focus, we are convinced the scene is relatively close, and the opposite is true for scenes with a large depth of field. We're convinced they're far away.
Okay.
So now we're getting close to why tilt shift works. So remember, with tilt shift, we artificially create a narrow depth of field for a given scene. So the brain interprets this as the scene being much closer to the viewer than it actually is.
Okay, right. That makes sense.
Okay, so you're in effect bringing in the scene by shortening its depth of field. You're bringing it closer.
Bring it closer.
Artificial.
Right.
So, now, normally when things move closer in real life, say as an object moves closer to you, it starts to become or appear larger. That is, it takes up more of a scene.
Sure.
For example, a person 50 yards away might only take up, say, a tenth of the vertical distance of a photo, but the same person 10 feet away might take up the entire photo.
Right.
But when we apply tilt shift and fool the brain into thinking the scene is closer than it actually is, the objects in the scene do not increase in size. They remain the same small apparent size due to their distance.
Okay.
If we really were bringing them forward, they would grow in size. They would fill up more of the scene.
So you would think that tilt shift wouldn't work because of that then?
Well,
that your brain would be going, hey, that's not as big as it should be.
This tells you how ingrained the effect is. When we use tilt shift to create a small depth of field, the brain automatically interprets objects in that scene as being much closer and much smaller than their actual distance and size.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't increase in size as we pulled it forward. They stayed the tiny little, you know.
So they must be little tiny things.
They must be little things. So given such a small apparent size of the objects in the tilt shift scene.
That's hard to say.
Yeah. They appear as if they must be little models and can't possibly be real. You can't have a person that's that small. And
so it must be a little model.
In other words, the effect, the depth of field effect and pulling things in close overrides what we think is the true size of that object, what we would normally think is the true size of the object.
Right. Okay.
It's more powerful than that.
Well, that's interesting. What about the color saturation and sharpening effects that people apply to do this? Why does that work?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a real good explanation, but I could see that that is turning up the color saturation or sharpening the scene. And I believe that works because it makes the object seem more cartoonish or painted rather than a natural color.
That makes sense. So if you had a tent, for example, if it was a toy tent, it would be kind of all the same color because you're not really far away. It's not really bending or waving or anything like that. But if it were a real tent, it might have a lot of color graduation in it.
Right.
By saturating it, it just kind of makes it all look the same, more like a flat plastic piece or something.
Yeah, a model.
Yeah.
And for video, they also often enhance the effect by speeding up the video so objects in the scene move quickly. Now, why does this work? Well, we often see smaller objects, and I use the example of ants, move quickly relative to their size, more quickly than larger ones, say elephants. You know, ants are dancing all over the place, zigzagging back and forth quickly. Elephants, you don't see that same, although they can move obviously faster than an ant, relative to their size, they don't.
Now, what if you do tilt shift photography of an elephant?
You're going to make it, look like a toy model of an elephant. You need to speed them up a little bit, though.
you've really spent a lot of time thinking about this.
It struck me because I wondered the same thing. Why is this so convincing? So I just thought about it a little bit more, and given a little optics background, it kind of came into focus, if you pardon the expression.
Well, that actually does help. I hadn't really put that much thought into it, and that's really intriguing. I think you're spot on. Everything you said seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, it could all be hogwash, but it makes sense to me as well.
So you pretty much made all this up?
I made it up, right.
Well, good. Well, thanks for coming on the air, Steve. I appreciate you clearing up this important, critical issue that was going to be disturbing if we didn't understand.
My pleasure. Always willing to help out your listeners.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, believe it or not, I actually thought of a new use for screen steps this week. Remember last week I was complaining that crazy listener James rewrote his Automator tutorial for me, but he did it in an email with links to sketch files online? And what a big fat pain that was? Well, I had the great idea to buy James a copy of Screen Steps as a gift. After the Nocilla discount, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, Screen Steps Desktop is only $30. So for that little amount of money, I'm going to get him to turn into a tutorial writing machine, and then he'll contribute more content and we'll all win. I got to tell you, when he first loaded it up, his first impressions were, wow, and this is fun. But of course, being the snot that he is, he started making improvement suggestions almost immediately. That's cool, though, because the developers over at Blue Mango Learning are really, really responsive to ideas and will either work on them or tell him why his ideas are stupid. Nah, I'm kidding. They'll never tell him his ideas were stupid. But they might not do them if they're stupid. Anyway, consider giving the gift of Screen Steps by going to screensteps.com, and don't forget that coupon code.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I?
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, Jim Sewell, also known as Deveril on Twitter, sends in our Dumb Question of the Week. Hi, Allison. I have at last answered your recent plea for a dumb question. Being kind of Mac dumb, you would think this would be an easy thing for me to come up with. Here's one I run into a lot. I want to know where something is on my hard drive, such as my Aperture library file. I know enough about Unix to do a big, long, nasty, slow command from terminal, but with Spotlight's features, I know that's not necessary. I go to Spotlight and put in a file name, or kind:aperture in this example, and up comes the listing as quick and pretty as you please. I still don't know where it is, though. Is it in my home folder, my extra storage drive, the ether, or in my imagination? When a file is showing in Spotlight, how do I find out where that file is? Left-click launches it, which is not what I want, and right-click seems to do nothing. So where do I see the location of the file? I think this is a perfect dumb question because I suspect 80% of the people are going, duh, right now, and the other 20% are saying, yeah, how do you do that? Thanks, Allison. You're the best. Well, Jim, I'm not sure I'm the best, but I do try my best. I have a solution that satisfies your need but won't actually answer your curiosity. First of all, I never use the Spotlight utility by clicking on the magnifying glass in the upper right on the Mac or hitting Command Space to start Spotlight up. I do use Spotlight, but I use it in a different way that's easier for me and more intuitive to me. I open a Finder window, and first I select a likely folder in which to search. If I have no clue at all, I just choose the entire hard drive to search. Next, I type the search term in the upper right search window, which also has a little magnifying glass. Let's say I'm looking for the modified Twitter icon I recently created, where I put a Santa hat on the toes of one Podfoot. Well, as you can imagine, searching for Podfeet in that little window will get lots of hits. But from here, I can start adding refining characteristics. There's a plus button where I can add filters, like kind is image and last opened within the last 30 days, let's say. This narrows it down to 3 images for me, and I can easily find the Santa hat. With this technique, I don't need to learn the terms like kind:aperture that you used. I can just use pull-down menus to find what I'm looking for. Now, the dumb question you actually asked is solved here, because when you click on the correct file in the open Finder window, across the bottom it shows you the path to the file so you can figure out where it is on your hard drive. If you just want to drill right to that folder, right-click on the file and choose Open and Closing Folder. Now here's a real shock. Believe it or not, this works exactly the same in Windows when, or if, it ever finds the file you've been looking for. You know, I could actually answer the question you asked, though. I did a quick Google search, and I found the answer on themaclawyer.com, where Ben gives the incredibly easy but unintuitive answer, something I would have never thought of. I would have right-clicked or left-clicked in Spotlight just like you did. Here's how you do it. Start up Spotlight, enter your search term, and then simply hold down the Command key and click on the correct file in the drop-down list. Instantly, a Finder window will open with your file highlighted. So, there you have it, the answer to your dumb question, and an answer totally sideways to what you actually asked. It's a twofer! Listener Lynn wrote in with a concern about some of my ads for Honda Bob. Here's what she wrote. Hi, just listening to the podcast. Please stop telling people to move here when you do your Honda Bob ads. I am sure there are plenty of locals that could call Honda Bob without adding more to the area. Well, you're right, Lynn. I've always said that if all the people who hated LA left, this would be an awesome place to live. So I want everybody to forget everything I've ever told you guys about how great it is to have Honda Bob come to your house to maintain your cars. Don't even think about moving here and buying a Honda or an Acura, just so you don't have to deal with some shyster dealer or worse. Make sure that you do not remember the phone number, 562-531-2321, and absolutely do not send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. Only do that if you already live in the L.A. or Orange County areas. H.A. Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, I told Bart that I don't like doing security light by myself. It's interesting to me when he does it, but I don't like it when I do it. It's boring when I do it. Well, he said maybe I should only tell you guys about the world-ending kind of stuff. Then he suggested the following criteria. If the software updates itself, there's really no need to tell you guys. Like this week, there's an update to Firefox 3.6, but it's going to do it all by itself anyway, so why do I need to bother you with it? Or let's say stuff like QuickTime. He said if you guys have been listening to this show this long and you don't click OK when software update says to run an update, and nothing I'm ever going to say in Security Light is going to get you to click OK. He also said that if there's a vulnerability being actively attacked today, I should tell you about it so you can manually go look for those updates. So, with that new criteria, that only leaves us with two quick points for Security Light. Microsoft says that the December security release will contain 17 bulletins, two of which will be a rating of critical for Windows and Internet Explorer. Another 14 of them will be rated important and will be for Windows, Office, and SharePoint. So stay tuned and look for those updates on Patch Tuesday, December 14th. Now, Windows is going to try to update itself, and I think IE does, but Office and SharePoint, I doubt that they do. I'm pretty sure they don't, so keep your eye out for that. Also, WordPress released version 3.0.3, which addresses a vulnerability that would allow an attacker to operate with elevated privileges. So if you run some WordPress sites, be sure to run the update. Oh, shoot, that's me. Better get on that tonight after I publish the show. Well, it's that time of the week again, but this time it is time for Chick Chat Across the Border with Lola Wong. How are you today, Lola?
I'm very well, Allison. Thank you.
I like your choice of terminology here. We're going to stretch this idea as far as we can go, right?
Chick chat. Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, we're two chicks and we're chatting across the border. And I think that, you know, I'm really sorry that Bart's still away, but I'm really glad for the opportunity to talk to you because we haven't talked for a while, Allison.
Yeah, it's been years, I think. Literally. We've been chatting offline before you guys got to come in. But, you know, it's like we talked yesterday, I think. But it's been 2 years, I think, since we talked on the Mac Review Cast.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit. Where are you exactly or slightly?
Well, I'm actually in the center of Canada in the very, very cold prairies. I think it's about minus 21, 22 degrees Celsius, which makes it about minus 6 Fahrenheit, I think.
Oh, so yeah, it's going to be 72 here today. So, you know, I can probably get out with a light jacket.
Oh, I'd be in my bathing suit right about now if I was in California. So
we're such babies here. It's so fun. You should see what it's like if it rains a day in a row. Like one day we're okay, but if it rains a second day, it's like, this is ridiculous. I can't deal with this. You
know? Well, I where I actually came from, I was in Ontario. They had a huge snowstorm where basically it was snow up to like sort of where the car windows are, like just like covering them. So I basically drove away from the blizzard. Normally where I am now, there's a lot of winter, but I kind of drove away from it this year. So I'm really happy. I'll take the cold over snow.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't want to do either one. We're, like I said, such babies.
So how are things, Allison?
Oh, things are fantastic. We're having a lot of fun here getting all set up for Christmas. And now you're kind of a Black Friday shopping crazy person, right? Would you say obsessive?
Well, oh, actually, yeah. Well, you know how Matt and, Tom and I do App Obsessed. I'm always looking for on the App Obsessed podcast. I'm always looking for cheap deals because basically I've been away to school and I don't really have a steady income right now. So I'm always looking for free stuff or like things that are discounted. And so I've been saving up my my list of gadgets that I want and the key ones for Black Friday to see if I can get any discount on software, gadgets, iPhone apps, you name it. I'm on the lookout. So yeah, that's the plan. And so this holiday season, now that I'm out of school and sort of, you know, wanting to, you know, pat myself on the back for graduating, I've let myself, you know, look at some key things that I really want to buy and or have bought already.
Oh, okay.
There was some list, like on the Black Friday, on the November 26th, there was a whole bunch of stuff going on Amazon and of course on Apple, both for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Did you happen to go on at all?
I looked, but nothing I really wanted was ever on sale. Like there was a TV we really wanted, and I swear it's not been on sale once. I've been looking, I check it every day because I'm still, you know, hoping that someday it would go down, but no.
How big is this television that you're looking
Not
at?
Not very big. We have a giant CRT in our bedroom that is literally 25 years old, I'd say. But it's this Sony TV. It's just cranking away. You know, we paid $700 for it back then. That was a huge amount of money, but it won't stop.
Yeah.
But it looks absurd now. You know, it just looks ridiculous. So
imagine what you're going to do with all that space. You know, it's because it's deep, right? It's like,
yeah,
it goes right.
It's actually mounted on a wall. So it looks like those big, stupid studio monitors you'd see in the old days, you know, and you see them in the background in movies from the old days. You know, it looks like when they had brick phones, you know, the giant bricks. That's how dumb it looks. But, it's standard def and it's kind of crappy looking now.
Oh, no. So the size that you kind of want maybe is like a 27-inch?
Well, this is 27-inch diagonal square. So in order to get that kind of space, you're really talking close to 40 to get that kind of space, the height. So, but they're not that expensive. But still, the one I want is not dropping in price. So,
Well, and you know what? I think that that's one of the things that I'm going to mention now is that even though some of these things, you know, passed on Black Friday, I think over the next little while, retailers and online retailers are still going to be dropping prices. Like you never know. There's these lightning deals that come by every once in a while, and so 40 inches is pretty decent. Like I think you can get a pretty decent price on them. And you know, there's always Boxing Day too, right? So.
Oh, that's right. Boxing Day.
Yeah.
That's a Canadian holiday, right? What day is that? The day after New Year's?
No, that's the day right after Christmas.
Right after Christmas.
Are you serious? Like, they don't have Boxing Day? I'm sure they have Boxing Day sales on
They might, but it would just be to be, you know, cute and metropolitan to do that. But we don't talk about Boxing Day. I never heard of Boxing Day until I had a friend from Canada.
Get out. Well, Boxing Day is bigger than Black Friday to, I guess, Canadians because it's the day after Christmas. People line up the same way they did on Black Friday, and you stand out, and there's usually door crasher sales at Best Buy, you name it, like Future Shop kind of thing. They'll stand outside, and they usually have, like, you know, those kind of big screen TVs and whatnot. So keep your eye out on the 26th for online because I'm sure they'll have the same sale.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's on your wish list?
I have a lot.
Okay, for the audience, I was stressing out because Lola hadn't written anything in the show notes, and I wake up this morning and there's like 400 things in the show notes. We'll never make it through. But yes, your wish list is quite extensive.
Yeah, well, these are sort of, I don't know if it's just marketing or really good marketing that's happened in the last, like, since October, but there's been some really key things that have shown up, say, on the Twitter feed and on like Mashable, like social media sites, and even there's some deal sites. Like I follow DealMac.com, which gives some really wicked deals, and that's where I would actually recommend if you're looking for a drop in price for your TV or whatever brand you're looking for.
It's DealMac, so it's not about Mac stuff.
That's all about Mac, but it also gives you some of the gadgetry that kind of is fun because I follow DealMac, but there's also DealNews.com, which is the same. It's by the same kind of group, and you'll get duplicates if you go on both of them. But Deal Mac is very Mac-centric, which is great.
Do you follow them on Twitter, or do you just go to the site every day and hit refresh?
Twitter,
like a crazy
mostly.
Obsessed person.
Yeah, but I've since gone onto the site because there are things that I think I miss on Twitter because, you know, I'm not on it 100% of the time, so sometimes the deal comes through. But I'll look back on the site and I'll see even more. So I would recommend visiting those in an RSS feed more than Twitter. Okay. Twitter is just like, I don't really want to spend that much money because this forces me to spend money. So Twitter's probably the rate I want it to come in at, but late I've been a little trigger happy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just laughing at you.
Yeah, no, like I don't need to spend any more money. But anyway, here's my
list. By the way, has your illness been diagnosed as the obsessive thing? I remember hearing you talk on the background or on the Mac Review Cast about your TV watching. It seems like there's an overarching disease here.
Yeah, I could say I have a little OCD.
That sounds good.
You know, that's okay.
So what do you want? What do you want for Christmas?
Okay, so first off, one of the really good and interesting things are I really would like a Bluetooth speaker, a wireless speaker. So there's two that have just come up on my radar. One is called the Jambox by Jawbone. Hmm. It's really funky. It's very hipster-esque. There's, of course, links to all these things in the show notes, but Jambox by Jawbone, like Jawbone usually makes the Bluetooth headset, but this little box is, you can Bluetooth pair it with your iPad or iPhone or even just your regular Mac. There's also an actual headphone jack that you can like link it up to your computer so you get like sort of a clearer quality. But I'll tell you, it's spiffy looking and it's just this little tiny, well, it's not little tiny, it's about the size of... just less than a foot.
Maybe a Domino's box. That's what it looks like in size.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I mean, it shows a woman holding it in her hands, and she's just gripping it, and it's not bigger. It's not that much bigger than her hand.
Yeah, not a Domino's pizza box, but a Domino's box, like a box that holds Domino's.
Yes,
like
sorry. Oh, good. Now you're with me.
Because I'm like, it's not pizza. No. And it's great. It looks really funky. You can, like I said, you can pair it so you can, like, say, play a game and you'll have it coming out of the Bluetooth, or you can even do speakerphone conferencing on it.
Oh, wow. I want one of those.
Yeah, no, it's really funky. And so it comes in different colors, which is fun. So there's blue, red, I think it's kind of a silver gray, and then it's not really silver, it's more gray, and then black. But the other one that I heard through, I guess, Callie Lewis, that was the Monsters.
Oh, wait, how much does the Jambox cost?
Oh, it's about $200.
Ooh, okay.
$250, I think, in some retail. And then I think on Black Friday it actually went down about $50. I don't want to do past stuff, but it did get discounted through the Apple Store. But just keep an eye out because, like I said, there might be some sales down the line or eBay sales.
I'm looking at it online, and now it's $200 right now on their website.
Okay, good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I found $250 on some sites. So $200 is about the regular then. That's good.
That's right from their stores. Oh, it comes in Blue Wave also.
Hmm.
Okay, so the one Callie Lewis suggested?
This one is $100 less. So it's about $99 on Amazon or through the Monster site. And it's the Monster iClarity HD Precision Micro Bluetooth Speaker. So same thing, Bluetooth. I don't know if this one does speakerphone stuff, like where you can do... it does. It does let you do hands-free calling as well. So you can use it as like a conference box. So instead of using those really old school like telephone and conferencing, you can conference through your iPhone on a table.
Oh, that's so crazy. Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And well, I guess that's the things in your car do, like the Blue Ant Supertooth Light, that kind of thing.
Exactly. So same concept. You can do the phone, but then it has a built-in mic. Both of these speakers have built-in mics that you could just plop it down in the middle of a table for a impromptu conference call, which I think is great because, say, I'm, you know, on my phone and, you know, my family's in the room. Hey, I just hooked this up. It pairs with your phone and wow. There's some really wicked – the Jawbone actually has some really wicked promo footage, I think, shot by Adam Lizagor. It's really nice. They're pretty funky. So both of these, but Monster, the iClarity right now is out of stock. Like I haven't been able to find it anywhere, but it's about – like it says on the Monster site it's about $120, but on Amazon it's about $99. You can get it for about $100. So.
But out of stock. So you're just a big old tease there then.
Yep, but there's much. I think that might just be the silver. I don't know if there's still any black left.
Ah, okay.
That one.
So this reminds me, Steve posted a Twitter link that just really confused me. Blue Ant has come out with a new device and he sent a link to it, and in his tweet he said it ruins your hard drive in half the time. And I just kept reading this over and over, going, "What is he talking about?" And I completely forgot. Do you remember the story where I got a brand new MacBook Pro, and I was transferring data to it? It was the day I bought it, and I needed to do a telecon, so I borrowed my son's Blue Ant Supertooth Light. I set it on the new MacBook Pro, and I forgot the way you mount it in your car is
magnetic. Oh no! And it's got magnets.
Yeah, I broke my brand new MacBook Pro the day I bought it. Because I set it right on top of where the hard drive is as I was writing to the hard drive. It's like,
Allison.
It's funny that I forgot all about it, though. It was a success story. I went to Apple and I said, I broke it. This is what I did. And I'm really, really sorry. And they said, okay, here's a new one.
Oh, Apple.
They were so nice to me. I did not expect that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, they could. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, I made a mistake. But, you know,
you have to pity the fool.
Yeah. I really feel really confident in Apple. I mean, sometimes they're pretty stringent about their rules. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, they want you to have customer satisfaction. And I really appreciate that about Apple. I'll tell you a story about the Amazon Kindle. My friend had put her Kindle next to her frozen lunch,
yeah.
And somehow lines started developing on it because it was
got too cold, the
temperature was too cold. I said, okay, and it wasn't like in where I am, where it's Blizzard Town, but she put it because it was too cold and the temperature affected it. These lines started developing, and so she actually just went back to Amazon, called them up, and said, look, I've got lines on this, and they just replaced the whole thing for her. So I think that, you know, I have faith in the – if you just make the effort to try to call and be polite and just say, look, this is what happened, I think that people would be willing to help you, you know?
And that's when you find out the companies you want to buy from again, the ones that are nice to you when you're a moron. You know,
yeah, exactly. You know, that's loyalty, right? That's loyalty.
Well, let's see. I've let you get through two things you want in 14 minutes. So I better.
Okay.
I should stop asking questions.
No. I'm really glad you brought that up. The next one I really want, because I've had, I've been using the same earbuds for a really long time, but I've been noticing as I've been editing that they're starting to really hurt my ears. They used to not, but I really wanted over-the-ear headphones. So one of the ones that I've always had my eye on since the day they came out were Beats by Dre. They're really expensive, I know.
Yeah,
they're
$200. Holy
yes,
cow.
They are. I have to say I have expensive taste.
So, I mean, how much of the Beats is that they really do sound cool versus they're cool?
You know what? I think the sound quality, what you do get what you pay for. I think that if you try them out in an Apple store, for instance, you can hear the bass. Like, and it's not like overblowing bass, but the sound spectrum, like for $200, you'd end up having to go to, like, Bose, I think, also sells like a $200 pair for noise canceling.
Yeah.
The Beats by Dre Solo, which is what I'm looking for because I want a little bit more portable and I don't need them super big, is about $200. Again, I think they were on sale with Apple on Black Friday.
So that's as expensive as Bose, but it's not with noise canceling.
That's correct. But this one has a control talk.
What's that?
It has this little, like, you know how the earbuds on the Apple, the iPhone, have that little microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has like a little volume and microphone thing on it, too.
Okay, so they are a headphone. I mean, they're not just headphones. They're actually a microphone as well.
Yes, but they come on a cable. I think in the box they come with two separate cables. One is just a regular 3.5, whatever, the headphone jack cable, and then one with a control talk. So you get two. I think it comes with a carrying case. And again, this is a little more, like, they're expensive, and I know, but of course, this is Christmas list, and I'm hoping Santa listens. At least one of them. I'm not asking for all of them. They're just on my list.
By the way, you would have liked it. I was at the gym last Sunday working out. I'm running on a treadmill, and the entire Indiana Pacers basketball team walks by in front of me, and I would say about a third of them were wearing Beats.
By
Dr. Dre.
Think,
you know, this is so funny. I was about to say, gosh, you know, I bet half of this is just because it's the name, like buying Monster Cable. I just looked. These are from Monster.
They are from Monster. So I've got two Monster things already on my list. And you know what?
I'm going to go buy stock in Monster. That's how I'm going to afford to buy stuff like this.
Well, and I thought at first it was just, you know, I think I could just buy a cable from Radio Shack for $3, like that plugs into my auxiliary in my car, right? Mm-hmm. So I have, but there's been always static. Like, I've had it for 2 years and I've bought static. So I actually bought a Monster cable just for the auxiliary for my iPhone, and the static disappeared. The quality of the sound in my car went up like 70%. Not 100, but 70%. Like, the there's a spectrum. There's something about it, and the cable is just wonderful. So I do actually believe in that quality.
Huh? I met a guy at the All Things Digital conference who worked for a company that, or owned a company that did super, super high-end audio cables. And I said, oh, you mean like Monster? He goes, oh, no. I'm talking like $1,000, $10,000 for cables. And I said, can you really tell the difference? He says, no, nobody can. He says, but there's people who will pay us to build them, so we do it.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that funny? He said, there's no human on earth who could tell the difference between what we do and what anybody else does. But if somebody's willing to pay us, we don't care.
It's true. Maybe that's who I am. A sucker. There we go.
All right. What's next?
The next one, I wanted some stuff to amp up my Mac because my Mac is getting kind of long in the tooth. But I've been traveling a lot. And so a lot of the stuff I really want is portable. And I'm starting to run out of space on the, you know, I carry my my iTunes music on a Seagate 250 drive, and I'm already close to maxing out the 250. Plus, I have a 1.5 terabyte drive just for backup and like television, of course, because I like to watch it. And then just various things like, you know, email backup. Like I needed a backup one, and I have a third terabyte drive. But those ones are really heavy, and carrying them around really sucks. So I've been eyeing sort of portable drives and ultra-portable drives because they are getting smaller and cheaper.
I'm obsessed with buying little hard drives. There's probably 12 on my desk right now. You know, they're just sprinkled all over the place. I just go and I go, oh, look how cute this one is. I need it.
Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing. A lot of the time I'm going in between like contracts and I need to share stuff with clients. And so one of the big things about me having these drives is also being able to hook it up to somebody else's computer sometimes. So, right. I format them in, you know, DOS, like MS-DOS, like just to make sure that they open on PC.
You mean FAT32?
That's what I mean.
Okay.
Oh, my bad. That's bad.
I just want to confuse anybody.
One of the problems is, yeah. One of the things is that I also use my FireWire port a lot because if I edit on video, I need that sort of faster transfer. Sure. And so my thing is I've noticed that they have the FreeAgent GoFlex drives. Have you heard of these?
I think so, but tell us about them.
They basically have this little sort of attachment that is an adapter. So you can switch the end of the drive to be USB 3 to FireWire 800, 500, 400 SATA. Like you can get all these little attachments, but you still have the same drive. And there's even a dock version too, right? Like you can put it through a dock. So one of my things is having a drive that I can just attach an attachment and then still hook it up to someone else's PC or another Mac without FireWire and have that transfer, or like especially with USB 3 down the line, it'll be upgradable then. So I'm excited about having those attachments because I've already run into problems trying to share something especially if I want to pass off this drive to for a Final Cut Pro video edit, right? Like,
you've been off doing FireWire 800, and then you're going to stick it to somebody else's computer. They've only got USB 2 or something. You'd just be able to flip it over.
Yeah, and I just really want that flexibility. So I've been really eyeing this, and I'm really hoping I can get one. They've come out just this past fall, and I've been eyeing. They've got everything up to about a terabyte, I think. Yeah, and they have different ones. Like they have desktop versions, the portable, and the ultra portable. But I absolutely want smaller stuff. So I really want to be able to carry everything in one bag as I go along. So
okay, we're up to about $12,000 now. What's next?
Yeah, exactly. And just to add to top of that, exactly. So in terms of carrying stuff, like I do carry a lot. I think we've talked about our purses once.
That's right. That was in your what's in your pocket thing, and it turned out to be what's in your purse.
Yep. Yeah, the other option is to not carry a purse at all and go Scotty Vest. I know that Scotty Vest is just advertised everywhere. I know Scott Jordan loves his advertising.
Didn't you buy a Scotty Vest a little while ago?
I remember
you were totally excited about it. Now you need another one?
Well, maybe another two. Because, like the one I bought was meant for winter. There's a fleece and a quantum jacket, like shell, but they were for the guy. Being a chick and a chick chat in chick chat, they've actually released more of their women's styles, and they're a little bit more tapered. They look less bulky on a female form. So my first real wish would be the go-to jacket, which they just released, and also the essential travel jacket for women. So these are actually women's size jackets and women's style, like where it's just a little bit of a taper. taper near the hip so that it doesn't look nearly like as straight. Like I don't look like one giant brick when I walk
right,
around.
Right, right.
And yeah, so then having these, one of them would be quilted that's more for winter, and the other one that I'm hoping for is something more summer because the fleeces only work, you know, 9 months of the time for my for where I live. But, you know, for the 4 months where it's actually warm, I don't really
warm
want
warm is like
bulk.
It's up to 50 degrees. Hey, look, Kelly Lewis has her picture in here.
Yes,
I've been flipping through the photos.
Big proponent of this. Yeah.
I know Katie Floyd loves her Scotty vest, but I think she got a vest vest.
Mm.
It might have zip on sleeves though. That might be what she did.
Yeah, yeah. There's a vest that you can just take off the sleeves. Most of
the poor thing lives in Florida, so you know you can't.
But she wants to wear the vest.
Well, because it's so easy to carry your all your crap. And we actually haven't said. Maybe there's one or two people in the world who don't know what this actually is. The crazy thing of this is it allows you to carry. Let's see, the one she's looking at. They've got an iPhone, BlackBerry, sunglasses. What do they got? Travel documents. They've got an iPad, a water bottle, and a camera, keys, and a memory card all stored in the jacket.
Yeah.
So if you travel a lot, it's supposed to be ideal because you get under the weight limit with your bags, but you know your body weighs 400 pounds. But then you can take it and just take the jacket off and put it through the scanner.
Exactly. And people like, oh, you know, it's all on your person. And, you know, if you keep your iPad and sort of main things, like I keep my phone and my iPad in there and then like pretty much stuff everything else in the either overhead or underneath. I don't ever have to reach for the bag. It's all just right there. So I just wait until, you know, they take off and I have it, you know, on me. And
Do your feet get tired because you're so heavy?
No, because remember, I would have carried it all in my backpack.
Actually, so you know, that's a good point.
Weight.
I carry almost that much stuff in my purse. I don't carry a separate camera, but I do carry all of my cables in my purse too.
Oh my gosh.
And the, you know, the MiFi, and you know, if somebody starts talking about, you know, the camera connection kit, yeah, I've got it in my purse. I've never used it for anything, but I can pull it out and show it to you.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
that
yeah.
stupid VGA cable that you can't actually play anything over, I carry that around too. Because it's cool to show people.
Why can't you play anything over it?
Because of HDCP, because of high definition copy protection. Half the time you can't play the movies you want to play.
So right.
It's like it's so and only movies and slideshow in the photos thing are natively supported. Some apps are starting to support it, but it's pretty few and far between.
Yeah. You know, hey, you were talking about Zumocast and AirVideo, which I have both and I love them both. Sometimes they're a little wonky for me. I don't know about you, but like during the conversion, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't buffer very well. So it stops like every 5 seconds. But do you know if the VGA cable works for those?
It's so funny. Right while I was saying it didn't work and some apps do, I thought, hey, I should check Zumocast.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it. I do not know. That would be a fun one to check.
Mental note, yeah, because I think that if you could play something like that through it, that would be so cool. You could just like hook up your iPad to a projector or whatever and or monitor and then play it from a remote computer in the basement, say, and that'd be really nice.
Yeah, actually, inside your house, that would be a really good solution because then you're not gonna run into those buffering problems.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, so I should keep going, but that's the
Scotty
Vest. Yes. There's the Glyph for the iPhone 4 by Studio Neat. Now, this is a really interesting story because they started maybe 2 months ago, October. I think they advertised for sort of backers, investors for their, it's like called Kickstart or Startup.
Explain it first what the Glyph is. I read all that, but maybe everybody else doesn't know.
Right. So the Glyph is actually a little tiny adapter that you can use to convert your iPhone in. Like, it's an adapter to put your iPhone in so that it will screw onto tripod mounts.
Yes.
So, for instance, if you had even a Mobi GorillaPod, like, you know, one of those little GorillaPod tripod mounts, it'll screw onto that. Now, they've already made, like, sort of an iPhone version of that, but instead of getting the iPhone version of that, you can use the same tripod and just screw on the Glyph for the iPhone with the iPhone in it, and then you've got your instant tripod for your iPhone.
It's also kind of a stand, too, so you can stand it up for FaceTime, which I don't know if you've done a lot of FaceTime, but it's so annoying to hold the phone that long.
Yeah, no, your arm gets really tired.
I know. It's silly, but it's true.
And it's actually a really nice stand because I tend to use this little plastic stand for as an alarm clock next to the bedside. But this, again, puts it, you can put the iPhone in it, and then it'll become a mini stand so that you can just let it sit. It doesn't work necessarily with a case around it, but it might, and it is pretty snug with, say, an invisible shield on it.
Okay.
So it's got to be naked-esque to sit in it. But otherwise, this is important for me. I would really like one. It's $20.
Oh, 20 bucks. Something yeah. we can afford.
Yes. Yeah. It's probably the best one, the cheapest thing on the list.
Now, they haven't started shipping any of them yet, though, right?
It
says shipping will begin in 1 week. We're making every effort to have them delivered by the holidays. This cannot be guaranteed.
Right. So here's the thing. I know that they were really surprised with the sort of the reception of the Glyph. Like, people really want this. Plus, they're like, again, their promotion and their advertising has, like, it's been amazing because I think a lot of people have heard it.
Well, they got John Gruber, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things is, what surprised me, I ordered it maybe 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. I ordered this one because it was $20, so I could afford to sell it. And I think they're under-promising, just like Apple. I think that they're going to say, okay, we may not be able to, because I think the demand is really high. But I got a notice about 2 days later saying, yeah, it's going to be shipped. It'll be there next week.
Oh, so, fantastic.
So not to promise that on their part, because I don't want them to think or other people to think that it's going to come right away. But the chances of you getting one if you order soon, you probably will get them, within and probably before Christmas if you do it like any time now.
But, even if you don't want to buy one of these, you really should watch the video, because these two guys that designed it are hilarious.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it, is they're just such appealing people. It was a need. I mean, everybody's like, well, how do I stick it to my tripod?
Yeah.
So, don't give me a great camera and then tell me I got to hold it by hand. That's ridiculous.
Exactly. And you know what? Like I said, the difference between paying $20 for this or a separate tripod just built for the iPhone, which I know that Mobi has come out with, it was like I was going to just buy that. But now I'm thinking, well, now that I have this,
You don't need a separate tripod. Sure,
right. And
sure.
I can use other people's tripods too, right?
Right.
Or just use the stand on its own. So that whole sort of tripod, and also if I use for filming. You were talking about iStop Motion, which I love, by the way.
Oh.
I bought it a while ago. I really think that using it for iStop Motion, because you need to have that kind of tripod effect, like you need to have it steady, especially if you're going to line up and make the animation smooth. This is something that you could definitely use with another tripod, right?
Right.
$20. I think it's well worth it, and I think it's really great because you're supporting like these really, like you said, interesting and charming people, and they're independent, right? But I think they're working their butts off right now. So
I think so. Well, yeah, it was a funny thing where when they did their initial video, they were saying, "Look, we've got this great idea, we've got this great design, but it costs a lot of money to get tooling built for it. Would you pledge $20 or whatever?" And so all these people pledged.
Right.
I got to check. I might have pledged. But it wasn't like a commitment. It was just, would you pay $20 for this thing? It's like, duh. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the response was huge for them. So
yeah.
They're very happy about that. It's spelled G-L-I-F, just to make sure that people don't confuse it with like glyph, like hieroglyph or anything like that. So,
right.
Moving
What's
on.
Next?
I'm interested in buying a MacBook Air. So that's the most expensive thing on my list, but I didn't put it on there because I think the chances of me getting that as a gift are a little, I might get a gift card, but not a gift. But, one of my things is
get a picture of a MacBook Air, that kind of
thing. Yeah. Just a little coupon for it. It's like someday you'll get one. I really am hypersensitive about losing things like my phone or my laptop. Because it's now become the central thing to my life in terms of business and or, making any kind of anything. Like, I mean, I live by it. I've always been hypersensitive about making sure that there's some way to track it or get it back. So something very similar to Find My iPhone.
Right.
There's a thing called Gadget Track. I don't know if you've heard of it, Allison.
No, huh?
Gadget Track is a company that sets up. They have free apps for the iPhone and iPod Touch, and I think iPad. You can use the same thing that will track your phone, like with GPS, just like Find Your Phone. But they also have a specific program for for laptops that will basically track it. They will take a picture. Like, they have a secret thing that will take a picture through the webcam if there's one available, or eyesight, I should say, and. The licenses, what were the license costs on them? basically, they had a sale on that you could get five licenses at one time over the...
Oh, here we go. Single license, $35 per year.
Per year.
So what does it give you beyond what Find My iPhone gives you actually for free, even without a Mobile Me account?
The webcam support. That would be the one biggest thing, because they do location notification and they do it on an update basis. So say you've left your laptop at home and you just really want to track it on a regular basis, they'll send you email notification with a picture. So say you could use it technically as like your nanny cam if you wanted to set it up and then just have it take pictures at, I think the interval is about half an hour. It may be 1 hour. I don't know. Can't remember, but it'll take the picture using the webcam and sort of noticed. So those are the big things that I would use GadgetTrack for. And I've bought it on top of another service that I have, like little labels on each of my gadgets, so that there's a reward if they can call a reward function. But this one lets you track it, and this one specifically is for laptops. Now, Find My iPhone doesn't work for a laptop, does it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're right. I was thinking iPad and iPhone, it does.
Yeah, so GadgetTrack has built these free apps for those that work. They don't take pictures, of course. But you could use Find My iPhone or you could use GadgetTrack, because GadgetTrack will let you put them all like under your account. You could all be tracking them all sort of simultaneously on one page, right? So that's really handy too. But the main thing is
taking a picture of the bad guy that's sitting in front of your laptop.
Yes, and also, you know, you have sort of Wi-Fi position. What does this mean? You can pinpoint, Find My iPhone. It's right. Like within a few meters. So, but I like it because it takes a picture. So,
I think I've heard of that being helpful though with the police. If you've got a picture of the guy,
yeah.
So
yeah,
okay.
And I think they've had several testimonials. Like, for instance, there was one, a big one in a school, a bunch of school thefts. So that was really helpful because they had installed it. It works for both Mac and Windows. That's another really important thing about GadgetTrack. So cool. Those, like you said, $35 per year. I think they have a family license. And as my laptop arsenal grows. I think I'd like to put one on each of them, because I just think extra security, because I don't have insurance other than, say, like AppleCare on it. So, you know, when it's stolen, at least you can take it one step further and, you know, you can at least find the culprit or see a picture of the culprit.
That would be so satisfying.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool.
So what's next on the list?
Also about losing things. So this thing called Zom, which is sort of a new thing this season, is basically called a wireless leash. It's a Bluetooth device that will alert you if you step within, I think it's 30 meters. Is it 30 meters away from your iPhone or gadget?
So you carry it in your Scott E vest, and when you leave the bar and forget your iPhone 4 on the counter, it'll tell you?
Yeah, see, it's all synergistic, right? Like, all these things play into one thing, which is me losing things or me having tons of gadgets on my personal body. You could also carry it on your keychain.
Oh, it's little. I can't tell how big it is. It looks like a hockey puck, like it'd be the size of your palm of your hand.
I don't think I'd carry that.
Yeah, I hope it's little. Oh, there it is next to an iPhone. Okay, it's not too big.
Yeah, it's like a key. It's the size of a keychain.
Okay.
Like
there it is next to some keys. Yeah, it is a keychain thing. Okay.
It's big enough to kind of be a keychain.
Wait, it's $90.
With coupon, you can save about $30 on it.
How much stuff do you lose?
Well, one of these, I was actually considering getting this as a gift for someone who actually left her phone in the Detroit airport. She had left it in the bathroom and walked away and never got to retrieve it. She left her iPhone 4. It was brand new.
Oh, that's
and
a heartbreak.
So something like that for someone who I know would probably do that again. I think this was a great gift, because the minute you get a little further, it'll start alerting you saying, hey, you're away from your phone. So you'll have a chance to go back and get it.
Oh,
it
it's also a hands-free speakerphone thing.
I don't know how good it is. Like, I'd like to test the quality of it, but it it basically does a speaker, like, because it's Bluetooth, again, it's a little Bluetooth speaker that you can just do. So if you're in the car and you don't have a Bluetooth headset, this should work. Like, again, I would like to test the quality of it because I'm not sure how good that speaker is. The third thing is it's an emergency dial. So there's a way to dial like 911 or like a speed number so that it will, like, it's like a panic button. So it's kind of, it would be the size of, like, you know, how your car keys start your car or like a car starter.
Right. It looks like it also does a panic alarm.
Yeah.
So you could just make noise.
That's the thing, because when you hit the panic alarm, it dials too.
Yeah. It says if it does a panic alarm, if you keep holding it down, then it dials 911.
There you go.
That's an interesting little device.
Even if it's not for you, I think that a lot of people might appreciate it as a gift. And that's why I think it's sort of on my list. Like, I really like to test it to see how good it is. And then if it is, then I might actually deliver that to, it is a hefty price for $99, but right now it's on sale. It should be on sale. There are codes, like discounts for Zom that you can save like 10%, I think.
So do a search for discount codes for Zom. Should be able to find him. Okay.
And right now they've discounted it 10. Yeah, they've already discounted 10%. It's $89.99, right? So normally the retail is $99. So it's $100, but now they've discounted to $90. And I think you can get further discounts if you search online. So.
Okay. Well, we got time for about two more, I think. And looks like you have about two more. Give us a cheaper one.
Oh, the cheaper one. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because I talked about the MacBook Air, like the Compass portable stand for iPad. Now, I use my iPad a lot. I like having it in the kitchen, especially, you know, when you're watching TV or if I'm doing recipes, because I have a couple of apps that do recipes. And I really love having it because it's kind of like the perfect size for a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I used it for recipes. Yeah. It's really fun for that.
And like it's something that you say, like, you love carrying it around. You love using something like ZumaCast or AirVideo just to watch. Right. So one of the things, I love setting it up, but I have no stand. I usually put it up against a coffee maker, and it's just not
And it
sturdy.
Slides.
Yeah. And it's not, like, and I keep it in the Apple case, right? Because I don't take it out of the Apple case ever.
Right. But it works pretty good in the Apple case for that.
Yeah. It's just, it's sometimes at the wrong angle because it's got that, it's just, it's at a very, I don't know what, a 30 degree angle?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So.
Maybe 20?
maybe 20.
18.7.
I was waiting for
Wait, but what's that in metric? Oh, you guys use the same angle, so okay.
Degrees, dude.
I know, it was degrees, see?
But the Compass stand would be something that I'd really like to have. It's basically an easel, right? That I put my iPad on, especially if I'm typing or I'd really like to have that as a sturdy device for the kitchen and or if I travel, right?
So 12 South Compass Portable Stand for iPad is the full name.
Yes, and that you can find at Apple. I think they were on discount on Cyber Monday, but it's still about $40, I think, on its own.
That's not bad, though.
No, Matt Hillier lives by it. He says it's great. He says it's portable. Like, you just fold it up and you can put it in your bag to go with you. So it's something that I would like to use down the line. So that's a cheaper one, but I would really like one of those. So cool. That's my list. Did you want anything off of – what's on your Christmas list?
Well, you know, it was funny. You were talking about your MacBook Pro getting a little long in the tooth. One of the things I've asked for to try to extend the life, I believe that we're going to see the next generation of MacBook Pros be all SSD.
Oh, my gosh.
And if they do that, I mean, that's going to just rock. But they got to be able to put a big enough SSD in it for us to be able to do the work we got to do. But in the meantime, I'm asking for an upgrade kit for the MacBook Pro. Like, OptiBay makes one of them, but I've asked for the one from OWC that lets you replace your optical drive with a carrier that fits into the optical bay, but it actually puts an SSD in.
So, oh my gosh.
A 64 gig SSD is not that much money. If you take the price of the highest end 64 gig drive that OWC sells, highest speed, and put it in that carrier and buy a case for it for the optical drive, so you still have your optical drive, you're only out about $300, and you increased the size of your disk, right? So you've got you've already put a 500 gig drive in, you've got you get another 64 gig, you move your apps and your OS over there, should be a significant speed improvement without losing space and without, you know, spending a house payment.
Right. And you know what? It would run so much smoother if you launched your apps from the solid state.
Right.
And then
at 64 gig, that's even enough for people like us.
Really?
Yeah. No, I checked. I can fit my apps folder and my, see, the OS is not that big. I can fit it in.
Wow. You know what? I didn't realize they did something like that because I would take the optical drive out in an instant.
Yeah.
Right?
How often do you use it? You don't even have any of your disks with you, you said, right?
Yeah. Right. One of my worries is upgrading is that I don't have my disks with me traveling. They're all at home. And I'm worried because if I switch this over, I won't have anything to install. But this is a really good idea because having that solid state, you're right. Not only are you going to improve the speed, but basically that 500 gig just becomes your file storage, right?
Right.
Wow.
And think about it. If you want to scrape your OS and get it and reinstall, you're not reinstalling all your data. You don't have to drag all that over. You can do that, you know, on a whim once a week or something if you felt like it.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things about buying a MacBook Air, as I was talking to Matt and Tom about how they were using it, and they're like, you know, with the advent of things like Dropbox and Evernote, you're really keeping a lot of your files in the cloud or anything that you really need to access are sort of elsewhere. And what you're doing is you're really just using your book for, you know, access to that, your notebook or your
MacBook
Air.
I don't live in that world at all. Not at all. Nope. None of my stuff is stored in the cloud.
Is because of security? Is it privacy issue?
Just don't. The content that I create weekly is my audio podcast. So it's these giant AIFF files and then smaller MP3 files. I use Feeder for writing all the show notes, and Feeder doesn't really talk to the cloud terribly well. So I carry my MacBook Pro with me, and I've only got one machine. So why would I have it in the cloud? There's no advantage to me. I don't switch machines really.
Right. Right. Well,
so I don't keep anything. I mean, my mail is in the cloud if I need it, but it's also local.
Right. So do you carry your MacBook Pro everywhere with you, like to and from work and stuff like that?
Well, I used to. Now with the MacBook or with the iPad, I don't carry it as often.
Okay. Well, then what do you access on your iPad on a regular basis?
Just like, is there mail and Twitter and Zumocast and you know, to watch video and stuff like that. So yeah, no, not. Not too much cloud stuff, really.
Okay. Yeah. See, I live in the cloud.
Working,
right?
You know, getting things done.
Right. Well, no, if you do production stuff, you pretty much sit in front of the MacBook Pro at home or in the studio.
And you
right?
have to have, I mean, you can't really do that stuff over the cloud.
No. Yeah, I agree. The same thing with, say, something like a video edit. I would always turn to the MacBook Pro. But in a lot of, like, say, I've been working on some research papers, that stuff, if I have to read, I would stick it in the cloud and then be able to access it from the phone or iPad when I'm on the road, right?
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
a lot of that stuff, like reading mostly and documents, right?
You read?
I read
books.
Not really.
But that's it. I don't read manuals or any of that kind of silliness. Hey, I did want to give you a chance because it is before the holidays. Can you do a speed fly through the holiday season contests and free stuff you listed?
Oh, yes.
But we're going to go fast. We're going to go lightning through this. And then all the links will be in the show notes.
You got it. So we've got Amazon.com. Okay. Amazon.com's 25 days of free. They basically have a free holiday song. You haven't missed anything. They're all archived so that you can still access the ones that started, I guess, at the beginning of December. There's Blacksmith Games
Sorry, I know I said lightning, but the Skype cut out for a second. It's 25 days of free is what it was called. So it's one free holiday song per day. I was just repeating it because it cut out. Okay, next.
Yeah, no. And then the next one is called AppVent Calendar, AppVent Calendar.com. That's from Blacksmith Games. They're basically offering a free game and or app a day.
For the Mac, PC, phones? What's it for?
For iPhone and for Mac. Actually not for Mac, just iPhones and iPads. But they're also offering a contest. It's called the Santa Claus Dress-Up Contest, video contest. and I think at the end, I forget what they win. Let me just check. In the meantime, I'm just going to let that load up. It is, you could win a MacBook Air. 13-inch for first place, a brand new iPad, second place, a quadricopter. Wow.
Ooh,
for
that's
third
fun.
Place. And then an iTunes gift card for fourth place, fourth to tenth, so they have a couple. So there's a contest there. Right now, there's a free holiday app called Cut the Rope, which I think Victor Callao actually mentioned on Twitter. Or was it him? It might have been somebody else.
Oh, Cut the Rope is so fun. I love Cut the Rope.
It's offered right now for free. So if you go to the iTunes store and look up Cut the Rope by Chillingo Limited. Chillingo. That's the company.
Yeah.
It's free, so download that app if you can. I just did. And then Zag has been giving away things every week for the last, it's the 12 weeks of Christmas contest. And so they're partway through, but there's still opportunity to win, and they get bigger every week. You also have a chance to get a discount code when you enter. So usually the biggest discount you can get is 50% off any Zag product, which is great, but you just have to enter.
What does Zag make?
Zag makes Invisible Shield plus other products, but the biggest thing that they sell is the Invisible Shield, which is a protector for, which I just wrap everything in.
I hate those things.
I'm sorry.
It makes them sticky and ugly and icky.
No, it does not make them ugly. In fact, it keeps mine so nice that I can resell.
You know what you are? You're that old lady grandma that puts the plastic on her couch and won't let anybody sit on it.
And remotes.
It looks fabulous, except you never get to see it look fabulous because it's underneath this sticky thing.
Yeah, but I can resell my computer and my gadgets back, and I can make money enough to buy a new one. So I'm really happy with them. But because I've also
okay,
like in the kitchen, I've actually scratched off my iPad a little bit with. But thank God there's the shield. Anyway, those are the contests that I have so far. All right, was that lightning?
That was good lightning fast. Oh, this I can't believe this flew by. That was 48 minutes long, and we said we were going to go 30 to 40. I think.
Sorry. Okay. All right.
No, and we talked for 30 minutes before you even got started. No, you should be sorry. You know, Connor always complains when the show's not twice as long as everybody else wants to listen. So.
Oh no. Well, hopefully we'll work it out. Yeah, people can listen to it on double speed, although I'll sound like double fast, I think. So.
Oh, I know. Yeah, let's see if we can challenge him on this one. He does listen double speed. So where can people find your nonsense? You mentioned the App Obsessed podcast a couple times. Where is that and can that be found?
Yeah, actually, the appobsessed.com. I think it's through Matt Hillier and Tom Perino and I do App Obsessed podcast. It's basically about iPhone apps and iPad apps. And we try to do a theme each week about, you know, just all the different ones that we do. And we usually, our tagline is I Spot It, because we usually just try to bankrupt each other by making each other buy them. So there's another podcast that I want to relaunch. It started as a project study. It's called thepocketlibrarian.com. And it's basically because I graduated from library school, and it's based on library issues and topics and interviews, a lot of interviews with library topics and issues, basically.
You know, I actually really want to hear about that. We were going to do that today, but then we have all the Christmas, the holiday stuff. So we will get you back on to talk about that, because I'm really intrigued about how technology has changed the world of library science. That's really interesting to me.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. And I would love to talk to you about it. And I really appreciate the time and effort. And thank you very much for having me on the show again, Allison. I really appreciate it.
Oh, we've been planning this for years. Finally pulled it off. All right. Thank you so much, Lola. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Allison. Bye.
What a blast talking to Lola. I'd like to have her on more often. She rocks, doesn't she? Love talking to her. Forgot how much fun it was. Now, remember that if you decide to buy any of the things on her gigantic wish list, you might just be able to find them on Amazon, and you could use my Amazon search link on podfeet.com in the upper left-hand corner, and then a small percentage of the purchase price would go towards helping the show. Wouldn't that be cool? Anyway, one last reminder to send in some audio clips for me so that I can produce the show early in 2 weeks because of Christmas. Of course, keep up the dumb questions and comments. Well, not dumb comments. I meant dumb questions, comma, and comments. Be silly. Anyway, do all of this by emailing them to Allison@podfeet.com and follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.